the studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. James L. Swanson returns to From the Bookshelf this week. We met him a few years ago when his remarkable book, Manhunt, The 12-Day Chase for Lincoln's Killer, was published. And now, James Swanson has published a new work, Bloody Crimes, which covers the same period of time but tells a completely different story, in fact, two stories. The fate of two presidents, Jefferson Davis of the Confederate States of America and Abraham Lincoln, the slain president of the United States of America. James L. Swanson, welcome back to From the Bookshelf.
Thanks. It's great to be back on the show.
So what a thing. I mean, how many 19th century history stories make the Entertainment Weekly must list?
Happy to have made it twice. When Manhunt came out, Entertainment Weekly was enough to give it a full page and an A rating, and to my great surprise and pleasure, they did another page on me when Bloody came out. But I think it shows there's hope, that people are still interested in history.
Well, in your last book, when we last left off, in our last chapter, ladies and gentlemen, President Lincoln was shot, and we followed the trail of his assassin, John Wilkes Booth, and now we sort of shift our focus to the wounded president's final hours. It doesn't seem that they were very nice to Mrs. Lincoln. They didn't treat her very fairly at that moment. I mean, she was kind of removed from her dying husband's side.
It's true. Mary Lincoln was a sad and troubled person. And that was before Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. She'd had one little son, Eddie, die in Springfield, Illinois in the 1850s before she and the president came to Washington. Their favorite son, Tad, died in the White House in 1862. And Lincoln really spent less time with Mary during the Civil War. She was mercurial, jealous, and according to Benjamin Brown French, the Commissioner of Public Buildings, who was deeply involved in the Lincoln funeral ceremonies and who also kept a brilliant secret diary about pre-war and wartime Washington, revealed many bad things about her. In fact, after Lincoln left the White House for good, he wrote in his diary, "It is good that she is gone. There are things I know about her that I dare not even write in this book." He had accused her of financial impropriety and other things. And the night of Lincoln's assassination, she spent most of that evening in the Peterson house in the front parlor, weeping and moaning and calling for a few close friends. And she did not spend much of the night at her husband's bedside. It was too shocking for her. And then, in the days to come, as this magnificent funeral was organized, she refused to participate in anything. She just locked herself up in her room at the White House, her dark room, where she sobbed and moaned for days. And unlike Jacqueline Kennedy, who was the visible face of the funeral of President Kennedy, Mary Lincoln never appeared anywhere. She just shut herself off from the world and remained in seclusion.
Well, now, the funeral is kind of an odd story, and I guess that's why you wrote about it. But, I mean, why wasn't the president just buried immediately?
Well, the question was, where should he be buried? For a few days, this issue was debated. Lincoln was shot on April 14th and died on the 15th. And for the next few days, after a gruesome autopsy and embalming that occurred in the White House guest room, when Lincoln's skull was sawn off, his brain was removed, and then he was embalmed, it was decided he would have a funeral in the East Room of the White House on April 19th, 4 days after he died. But during that time, there was much debate on what to ultimately do with him. Mary Lincoln and her son Robert would have the ultimate decision. And telegrams poured into Washington from Kentucky, state of his birth, send him to us. Chicago wanted him buried there because he had been nominated for the presidency there in 1860 and he'd practiced law in the federal courts. Springfield, Illinois, where he had lived almost a quarter century and practiced law, wanted his body brought there. And a number of important government officials wanted to bury him under the U.S. Capitol Dome, under the rotunda. There was an underground chamber, a crypt intended for George Washington, but Washington wanted to be buried at Mount Vernon. And so that was empty. And many people lobbied that he be kept in Washington and buried right in the Capitol. But ultimately, Mary Lincoln and Robert decided that he would be buried in Springfield. But of course, that could have been done with a quick direct train trip right from Washington to Springfield with very few stops along the way. But then something quite different was planned.
And that crazy route, I mean, how many miles did he travel?
It was approximately 1,645 miles. And the journey took him straight north first through Baltimore, Philadelphia, Harrisburg, New York City, Albany, Buffalo, and then the great turn west, which took him to Cleveland, Columbus, Ohio, Indianapolis, Chicago, and then the final turn south to Springfield. So it was quite an indirect route. But the Secretary of War Stanton, who was organizing this funeral train, was, again, inundated with telegrams from all the cities that Lincoln had visited 4 years before on his way east when he was president-elect. And he took a slow train journey through the major cities of the North and met with people, spoke to the crowds. And these telegrams said, send him back to us again. We want to see him again. And so this elaborate procession was planned. Of course, the strangest thing about it was simply that Lincoln was going to be taken on a funeral tour or pageant through all the cities of the North. His corpse was going to be exhibited to 1 million people. There were going to be open coffin viewings in all these cities. And his body was decomposing. He lay unburied for 20 days. And yet, in each of these cities, the coffin was removed from the train, opened, and 1 million people, including 100,000 children, viewed the corpse of Abraham Lincoln on his journey home.
It's bizarre. I guess he was probably, at that time, maybe before Lenin, he was the most viewed corpse in history.
I think that's true. He still might be the most viewed corpse in history, maybe perhaps with the exception of Lenin, whose corpse was displayed for decades in Moscow. If, of course, that really was the corpse of Lenin and not an ingenious wax figure.
It looked pretty waxy where I saw it.
Yeah, but certainly in America, Abraham Lincoln was the most viewed corpse in American history. And the whole funeral pageant was the largest, most emotionally intense, publicly staged event in America up to that time, and I think to this very day. The funeral of John Kennedy was partly based on the funeral of Abraham Lincoln. Of course, Kennedy was not transported across the nation by train. His funeral ceremonies were in Washington only. But the night that Kennedy's body was brought home to Washington from Dallas on evening of November 22, 1963, researchers were sent into the National Archives and the Library of Congress that very night to research how the funeral of Lincoln was conducted in Washington so it could be replicated for John Kennedy.
Well, of course, when President Kennedy died, and those of us who are old enough to remember that, remember very well kind of the funeral was carried on television, so it was like we were all there. And not only that, but those 4 days in November had a certain feeling, a mournful feeling that permeated the whole country. When we think of the death of President Lincoln, you know, we sort of think of it as history. But your new book, Bloody Crimes, The Chase for Jefferson Davis and the Death Pageant for Lincoln's Corpse, really resurrects that mournful feeling and takes it away from history and really brings us right back to the moments, what America was feeling at the time of Lincoln's death.
Oh, well, that's what I tried to do by going to the original newspaper accounts, which are voluminous. The major papers in all the cities wrote extravagantly detailed reports of what happened. I looked at letters, at diaries, at personal recollections of the participants, of the memoirs of the general who commanded the funeral train, the diary of Benjamin Brown Finch, who helped decorate the city and the Capitol and the White House. And I came to the conclusion that the funeral ceremonies for Abraham Lincoln in Washington and then across the nation were even more vivid than the John F. Kennedy events. We remember them because they were televised. But if you want to get a sense of how shocked and horrified horrified and outraged and sad America was when Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. Imagine the feeling of America after the Kennedy assassination, but then multiply it several times, because it had never happened before. No president had ever been murdered before. And this murder occurred at the climax of a momentous civil war, which had taken the lives of 620,000 Americans. Today, that would be like 5 to 7 million people were killed in a war, those 620,000. And so it was simply unprecedented. And the mourning was deep and emotional. And I hope that I communicate that in my book, because I argue that there's been nothing like it in American history ever that approaches the emotional intensity of the death and funeral of Abraham Lincoln.
So it's as if it was a funeral for the entire nation.
It was. It was. And in fact, in Walt Whitman's great poem, When Lilacs Last in the Dooryard Bloom, he talks about giving a sprig of lilac to Abraham Lincoln, to a passing coffin. But then Whitman makes the point in that poem to say that he brings these sprigs to coffins all. And by that, Whitman meant not just the coffin of Abraham Lincoln, but the coffin of all the 340,000 Union men lost in the Civil War. And I think the American people viewed that funeral train as not only bringing home the body of Abraham Lincoln, but bringing home every son, every father, every brother, every husband lost in that war. Because so many of these men were buried in unknown graves. They were buried on the battlefield, and their ones never received their bodies and were never able to bury them at home. And so somehow this Lincoln funeral train took on magical power or resonance as it chugged across the country. And the emotions surged day by day. The longer the funeral train was on those railroad tracks, the more sensational the story became in the newspapers and the magazines and among the American people. I'm convinced that Lincoln was viewed as the last victim of that war, but coming home with him, symbolically, was every man lost in the war.
It's remarkable in the photos in your book, and there's quite a few of them, that show how each stop on the funeral tour had built their own elaborate altar for Lincoln's body.
Yes, and that's a good description, to call it an altar. And that's also one reason I do put an unusually large number of photos in the book. It's certainly a full-length book of text or narrative history, just like my last book, Manhunt. But there are so many amazing images, including the only known photograph of Lincoln in his coffin in New York City at City Hall, of photos of these hearses and other things. In fact, in New York City, the hearse, so big and so elaborate, it was really almost as big as the log cabin in which Lincoln was born. 16 horses pulled this hearse through the streets of New York City, where 500,000 people viewed it. In Philadelphia, they laid Lincoln's coffin to rest on a platform that was at the foot of the Liberty Bell. In each city, there was a different elaborate hearse made just for the occasion. Special displays of flowers and statuary and art. Each city tried to outdo the city that had just preceded it on the route. There was actually a competition among the cities to show who loved Lincoln most, or who could put on the most elaborate and beautiful display.
We're speaking with James L. Swanson, and his new book is called Bloody Crimes, The Chase for Jefferson Davis and the Death Pageant for Lincoln's Corpse. So, you know, it seems that the assassination of President Lincoln achieved the exact opposite of everything that John Wilkes Booth had hoped for. I mean, rather than cause a rebel uprising, Booth's act was sort of the last nail in the coffin of the Confederacy.
Yes, it's true. Booth actually believed that he was an American patriot and that he was striking down a tyrant. And he believed that many Americans would celebrate this. In fact, that's why when Booth was on the run during this incredible 12-day chase for him, when he was hiding out in a pine forest for a few days, one of his helpers brought him newspapers. Booth was desperate to read the newspapers because he thought he was going to be celebrated. And when he read what those papers said about him, he was crushed. And before Booth was down and shot and killed after 12 days on the run, he knew that he had been condemned for it. Robert E. Lee was horrified. Jefferson Davis thought it was a terrible mistake and harmful to the South. And so Booth lived long enough to know that the South would not rise. He did not change the outcome of the Civil War. And he knew before he died that he had been condemned as an outlaw and a murderer.
So for Jefferson Davis, who was the president of the Confederate States of America, the assassination of Lincoln was one of the worst things that could have possibly happened to him. How did he first learn of the assassination?
Well, it took a long time. In fact, we can divide the escape of Jefferson Davis and the six-week chase for him into two periods or two phases. First is when he flees Richmond on April 2nd, 1865. Abraham Lincoln still has 12 days to live. And Davis flees Richmond and the city burns, and then Lincoln visits the Confederate capital while the ruins are still smoking. He does not order a manhunt for Davis. Lincoln wants Davis to just vanish from history and escape. Lincoln does not want to arrest Robert E. Lee or the other top generals, but he believes to reunite the country and bring about peace, we can't punish the Southern leaders. We can't try them. We can't execute them. But when Lincoln is shot, all the North believes that Jefferson Davis is behind the plot. The new president, Andrew Johnson, has despised Jefferson Davis for years. And he issues a proclamation blaming Davis for the murder of Lincoln. And he doubles the reward for John Wilkes Booth, which was $50,000. He doubles that reward to $100,000 for Jefferson Davis. Now he's in real danger. He doesn't know that because Lincoln dies on April 15th, but it's not until Davis arrives in Charlotte, North Carolina on April 19th, 4 days later, does he even learn that Lincoln has been shot. He could have accelerated the pace of his escape if he knew that Lincoln had been killed. Davis knew once Lincoln was murdered, he was in great danger, just like John Wilkes Booth, of being hunted down and shot to death on the spot.
Is there any record of what Jefferson Davis said or how he reacted when he heard of the death of President Lincoln?
Yes, there is. There's the myth, and then there's the truth. Someone lied and said that when Jefferson Davis heard about the murder of Lincoln and the failed attempt to murder Secretary of State Seward, where he was almost stabbed to death in his horrific crime where many members of his family and household were injured, it's alleged that Davis said if it had to be done better, it had been done better. And the meaning is, of course, too bad we didn't kill them all. Well, that's false. Davis actually confided to his close aides who were traveling with him during his escape, "I have no special affection for Mr. Lincoln," and that's because of the way the South had suffered in the war. But Davis said, "I fear this is a great calamity for our people." Davis didn't rejoice at the murder of Abraham Lincoln.
Do you think if Lincoln hadn't been killed, would there have ever been a chase for it? What would have happened to Davis? I mean, I know the what-ifs are kind of hard, but what do you think would have happened to Davis?
I think if Abraham Lincoln had not been killed, unless a Union cavalry had on its own or accidentally come across Jefferson Davis, I think Davis might very well have been able to escape to Texas or the West. He might have escaped to Mexico or even to Europe. He would have never been captured because once he had escaped America, Lincoln would not have issued orders to go overseas and capture him. Lincoln didn't want him. Lincoln did not want to lock him up, and Lincoln certainly did not want him brought to trial. So Davis might have gone to a foreign land unmolested.
We're talking with James Swanson, author of the new book, Bloody Crimes. You know, you point out in your book that there's 10 jillion books written about Lincoln. I think there was several published this afternoon. And yet, there are very few about Jefferson Davis. He's sort of a forgotten figure in American history.
It's true. Jefferson Davis is really one of the lost men of American history. We don't think about him. We don't remember him. And I don't think anybody reads his memoirs anymore. It's ironic because before the Civil War, it was Jefferson Davis and not Abraham Lincoln, who was viewed by many people as an American leader of great accomplishment. Abraham Lincoln was a graduate of the first grade, and he had served one unsuccessful, unremarkable term as a U.S. congressman in the late 1840s. In contrast, Jefferson Davis was a graduate of the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. He had been wounded in battle in the Mexican War, and he was a hero of that war. He was a congressman, a two-time U.S. senator, and one of our ablest secretaries of war in history, and he was viewed as a great spokesman for all of the South. And so if you would ask most people prior to, let's say, 1858, before the Lincoln-Douglas debates, before the presidential election of 1860, if you would ask most Americans to predict who was a more likely future president of the United States, Jefferson Davis or Abraham Lincoln, I think the majority of people would have said Jefferson Davis, and some people even would have said Abraham who?
And so was it part of your goal to resurrect Jefferson Davis?
Yes, very much so, because the myth of Davis is that he was a dour, arrogant, somber, stubborn man. And that's a very flat picture of him. Davis had a much more fascinating life. He was much more complex. In fact, Abraham Lincoln and Jefferson Davis shared many unusual similarities. And so I think, especially as we're now looking to commemorate the 150th anniversary of the Civil War, you know, we've recently celebrated the 150th anniversary of the election of Abraham Lincoln to the presidency, and we're looking forward soon to commemorating the 150th anniversary of the firing on Fort Sumter and all the Civil War anniversaries to come. I think it's important that to really understand the history of the war, we have to know not only the President of the North, Abraham Lincoln, and what his journey through history was. I think we have to know the history of the Confederacy and its President, Jefferson Davis.
Of course, lurking there is the fact that the Confederacy was built on the idea that all men were not created equal, and that the black man was far from equal, even not even human, right?
Yes. It's interesting, because even though Lincoln and Davis were both born in Kentucky, less than 100 miles apart and less than a year apart, and even though both men were men of reason and analysis, and they weren't hot-headed, passionate people, even though they both loved reading and study, even though they both revered the founding generation, the Revolutionary War generation, and they revered the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, and even though they dealt with similar tragedies in life, the death of their first loves, the death of sons in their White Houses, and they were beleaguered throughout their presidencies by critics from their own countries, and even though they laid their heads on their pillows less than 100 miles apart each night in their mansions, dreaming of how to defeat each other's empire, there was one fundamental difference between Abraham Lincoln and Jefferson Davis. And that is, who is man? What is the nature of man? Abraham Lincoln once said, and he believed through his whole life, and I'm quoting him now, "If slavery is not wrong, nothing is wrong." And Lincoln said, "As I would not be a slave, so I would not be a master." And he believed that all men, including blacks, had the equal right under the law to their own liberty, their freedom, their product of their labor, that they should enjoy equal rights. Jefferson Davis and the leading Southern planters believed the opposite. They believed that blacks were suited for slavery. They believed in white racial superiority. And that was the fundamental difference. Abraham Lincoln and Jefferson Davis never met. They were never friends. They never knew each other. People often ask, well, if they'd known each other, if they'd been friends, could they have compromised? Could they have avoided the Civil War? I don't know. Because this great fundamental divide about the nature of man divided Abraham Lincoln and Jefferson Davis. So I don't see how they could have reached a compromise on that issue. Either man was equal or he was not. How can you compromise and choose the middle ground between that?
Yes, it's often been said that the Civil War was caused by many things, but the one thing that could not be compromised was slavery.
But yes, yes.
Do you have a fear, James Swanson, that by championing the life of Jefferson Davis, that you personally will be perceived as racist?
I don't think so, because I try to present Jefferson Davis's life as he lived it, with his qualities and his flaws. Certainly, because I think it's very dangerous to not study people because we disagree with what they did, or because, let's say, they supported slavery. Because then that would mean we should not study the life of George Washington, we should not study the life of Thomas Jefferson, or many of the founders. There's no doubt about it. Slavery was the singular great American crime, and it was wrong, and it had to be stopped. But to understand it more, to understand American life more, to understand the history of the South, we need to study these people, including Jefferson Davis. I think it's a mistake to view someone as objectionable and then discount them from even proper study, because there's so much to learn from studying all the leading figures of the Civil War. So that's not at all a concern of mine. I certainly don't take up the cause of slavery in my book. I make it very clear that I'm a Lincoln man, that slavery was this great American crime. So I'm not worried.
It does also seem, and I think this is one of the brilliant things about bloody crime, is it really brings us the feeling that people in the 19th century were exactly like people today.
Well, I think so. It was only 150 years ago. And human motives then are the same as human motives now. What are people motivated by? But by love, by greed, by patriotism, by love of family, by love of country, of region. All range of human behavior that existed during the American Civil War exists today. If Abraham Lincoln was made to reappear in modern America, he would feel contemporary. He would be able to discuss the issues of today. He would be able to analyze them. He wouldn't feel like some antiquated person from ages long past who couldn't speak to us today. I think if Abraham Lincoln sit down with you in a room today, you could have a fascinating conversation about contemporary American life that would last for hours. He would feel modern. And so you're right. These people were very much like us. I think we think of them as removed because motion pictures didn't exist yet. We don't have recordings of their voices. We can only look at them in these frozen and often stilted photographs of the time. But if you read their words live, their letters live. If you read how they wrote and thought, they can seem very contemporary, and we can understand them and understand their ideas and their values and their failings.
This new book, it's called Bloody Crimes, and the author is James Swanson. He's also the author of the great book Manhunt, The 12-Day Chase for Lincoln's Killer. James Swanson, thanks so much for taking some time for From the Bookshelf.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me back on the show. I really enjoyed it.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the program and that you'll come back and join us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at KUSP.org or find us on Facebook and iTunes. I want to thank our From the Bookshelf staff, the lovely Miss Breanne Beal, for all of her hard work. Thank you so much, Breanne. And of course, I want to thank James Swanson. He's the author of Bloody Crimes, The Chase for Jefferson Davis and the Death Pageant for Lincoln's Corpse, for being my guest this week. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro. I hope to see you next time.